You've always had what it takes to make it happen, and we know the right tools can make it easier. At Strayer University, we're always thinking about new ways to set you up for success. That's why we give you a brand new laptop when you enroll in a bachelor's program, so you can start off on the right foot and keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Eligibility rules, restrictions, and exclusions apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
The Agile Brand.
Welcome to the Delighted Customers Podcast, now part of the Agile Brand Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mark Slayton, and I am so glad you're here. I empower leaders to delight their customers, and I talk to guests with a wide range of expertise who share meaningful insights, wisdom, and practical tips that you can use immediately. I'm also excited to announce the Trusted Guide Roadmap Masterclass for CX leaders who struggle with executive buy-in and are ready to go beyond CX fundamentals. The masterclass gives you proven frameworks and takes you step-by-step through a four-step model that will move you past the frustration of not getting your work done. It's unique because it's live, interpersonal, hands-on, and we give you tools and templates to help you build your CX roadmap. To learn more, visit empoweredcx.com. That's empoweredcx.com. And now, on to the show. Well, I always love to have guests on the Delighted Customer Podcast who are in the world of academia. And I have an honor of speaking to someone today who I think you'll enjoy, who is very much in the world of academia, but his background gives perspective. And I think perspective is a great word for someone who has varied experience, who can share that experience and provide us with wisdom. And I think Keith Ferguson, also known as Ferg, is an exciting person to have on the show because of what he does now, but what he's also done and what led up to his background. Keith is the professor of practice in the Master of Science program in Customer Experience Management, the MSCXM program at Michigan State University. And he teaches a course called Consumer Decision Making and Behavior. Now, how do consumers decide on who they're going to buy from? But he's also an associate lecturer and entrepreneur in residence in the Department of Marketing at FSU, Florida State University, where he is really a full-time professor, a lecturer. And Ferg has experience in really a wide range of businesses, mostly in the B2C space, where he was in hospitality. He owned a restaurant, liquor stores, he was involved in construction, property management, even medical supplies. So really wide and diverse range of products. And I'm just so excited to have you on the show. Welcome, Ferg, to the Delighted Customers Podcast.
Well, thank you, Mark. Great to be here. I'm super excited about you and I chatting about the CX space and also sharing some of the things that I do at MSU in regards to consumer decision making, some of the psychology that goes with that, and also to talk about how some of that applies in more of the CX space instead of the traditional consumer behavior space. So glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. And so excited. The knowledge and background that you bring to the conversation today, we're going to be hitting on three keys to driving customer advocates. Let's start off with the definition. When we talk about advocates, not everybody knows what that means. And so if you don't mind sharing what that means and why that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. So advocacy is really in the customer life cycle is the last stage of it. But the customer life cycle, if you could just envision a eight, like a figure eight, but then laid on its side. So the last stage is advocacy. And advocates are things that we call brand evangelists. They have brand love. Those are the folks that will voluntarily go out and talk about your products, your service, the experience they've had. And this drives positive word of mouth. It drives great reviews, social media attention, and it really helps to promote the company and also delight the customer. So that's what we're ultimately shooting for, is to create advocates of our customers and to build our customer base by creating more loyalty and then more advocacy within the firm.
So who doesn't want more loyal customers?
Absolutely.
Right. So the idea that customers buy from you and they repeat purchase and they tell their friends. And also one of the things I would add to that is they tend to be more forgiving.
Yes, absolutely. We all realize that maybe the experience is going to be 100%, but if we can do something to make it that way, they will be more forgiving. And, you know, it's funny, it really works in the space that we're in as far as educators. Students have things like rate my professor, they talk to their friends. And I know this sounds like I'm being boastful, I'm not, but we just had our enrollments open. And I'll ask students, why did you take my class? And they'll say, well, my friend told me I have to. It's a great experience. Or I looked at Rate My Professor and you had all fives. And what I do in class is I try to have some fun, be humorous, try to educate, but also have the energy there. But about halfway through the class, I always stop. This is my face-to-face classes. And I do Fergie trivia. So I'll look at, today is National What Day? And then I have candy. They just take a piece of candy. And then I ask them a silly trivia question. Let's say I said, hey, Mark, how many people in the world did X? And you said three. And it was like really 3,000. I'll always say, oh, you're so close. It's 3,000. And so over time, I've noticed that when my enrollments open, that my classes fill up within probably 2 to 5 days. And so that's awesome. And the bottom line is that they love the experience that they have in class. Even if the class is at 8 a.m. and they're a senior, they'll say, ah, Ferg, I didn't want to take your class that early, but I know it's going to be a great class. It's always a good experience. And so I think it's in every realm that we're involved with. You know, it's not only business, it's teaching, it's how we treat customers, how we treat individuals, how we treat our friends, you know. So the experience thing is really, really important. And so, you know, I just think that it's great that we're part of this program to really bring this out and to get advocates to talk about why we should use, you know, Mark or Ferg or whoever, you know. So it's a great thing. And it's been an area that's been very ignored, and advocacy is a big part of it.
Yeah, and I will just add from some of the research that's out there on customer advocacy as you go. So for example, our courses I teach customer relationship management, and so my course takes it from the point of that infinity symbol or the eight on its side that you described, from sort of the middle point, that purchase point. Mm-hmm. There are several steps before that, before they make a purchase decision. And then it goes into what's called service to loyalty and loyalty to advocacy.
Correct.
On that part of it. And the data is clear that even going from someone who loyal, and that means they buy from you, they really don't consider alternatives that much anymore. But if something should happen, they would make a change. Something, maybe someone new entrant to the market, maybe there's not as what they call the fortitude there of the customer. If there is an issue, they'll move, they'll switch. Whereas advocacy, man, you pretty much, they'll defend you. They'll defend the brand even when there are mistakes. So there's a financial impact that companies like Mention Me in the UK, who are really focused on capturing those customers that are influencers, that buy again, that are really brand loyal, and then activating them to refer. That's a big why it matters to go from loyalty to advocacy. What would you say to that?
No, I think there's really three stages of loyalty that we talk about in consumer behavior. So you have the ones that are kind of loyal to your product. These would be like your newer users. But if you give them an offer, like a competitor gives an offer that's pretty attractive, they'll switch.
Yeah.
Then we have the ones in the middle that might really kind of think about it. The ones we want are the last phase, the true loyal customer. And let me ask you a question. So are you a Coke or Pepsi guy?
Right. So I'm a Pepsi guy.
Okay. So you go to a restaurant, they say, we have Coke. And then what does Mark say?
Well, I would have the Coke if I really wanted a soda.
Okay. But for me, I'm a Coke guy because they helped me through college because I work for them in the bottling plant and everything else. So if I go to a restaurant and they say, we only have Pepsi, I'll say, well, I have an iced tea or I'll have a water. So that's the type of loyalty that we want.
Yeah.
And we're seeing in consumer behavior, more and more firms are having loyalty programs. So we have, you know, tiered programs, points, miles, sky miles. If you fly a lot, if you stay at Marriott or any other hotel, you have points that you can earn from that. What we found in research and marketing is that if people have a choice, they're more likely to go to where they're part of a loyalty program. And that is what we really want to shoot for. And then if they're extremely happy, then we move, as you said, into that advocacy phase where then, you know, again, you could say, oh, I didn't have any towels for you at Hotel X. And you'd be like, that's okay. I use the bath mat, but they're so good to me there. I just have to keep going back. And so, you know, it allows for a little leeway, but you don't get that customer churn that you normally would if somebody wasn't that loyal. So,
Berg, can we digress a little bit and talk about loyalty? Specifically loyalty programs. And the reason it's been a bit of in the news and it's been interest lately, specifically to Delta, because Delta's frequent flyer mile program, and I apologize, I don't know the name of the brand of it, but
SkyMiles.
There you go. Okay. SkyMiles program, because they had an issue with kind of, I guess, lowering the bar so much that there were too many people that could go to a Sky Mileage lounge or whatever in an airport or utilize the services, that it became, you know, crowded. And then they increased what you needed to do to qualify, which got people upset because, like, wait a minute, I've been loyal to you all this time. So what do you say to people who say, yeah, loyalty programs are a mixed blessing?
I agree with that. I think the problem with Delta specifically is that you took a thing that made people feel like they were a VIP, so to speak, and you commoditized it. So anybody can go in there. So all of a sudden you're looking around going, how did these people get in here? You know, and then they go, oh, hang on, we really upset our, you know, loyal business customers, probably those that travel frequently, the ones that really pay the bills. Yeah. And so they got really strict with it. And then only thing they do to try to differentiate between that commodity and then making it a true experience again is that they just made everybody mad. And then now all of a sudden you have to try to, you know, go back and make those people happy again. They're not very happy with you. And it's just, it totally botched up the model as far as loyalty. And I don't think there's anything wrong with exclusivity. I mean, you look at Neiman Marcus, they have a tiered program, bronze, silver, gold members. So if you get up there in the higher areas, they understand your sizes, new clothes that are coming out for the seasons. And they'll actually put together outfits and have you come in. They'll give you a glass of champagne and they'll show you the items. They give you a lot of leeway as far as returning items. And that is exclusivity. And people love that. We all want to feel like we're special. You know, not that we're just an everyday consumer. And so I think Delta really, I think they've kind of learned, maybe like Budweiser did with the Bud Light, and we won't get into that, but that's really hurt them a lot financially. So I think consistency is the big thing. And then again, focusing again on that customer. They failed to do that on the people that are paying the bills. And that's the tough part. That's the lesson learned, I think, from that.
Yeah. So it's sort of like count the cost before you embark on these things. And what I mean by that is, you know, really think through the long term, the short and long term of a loyalty program strategy and the implications for, you know, are you going to dilute it too much? And then the value won't be there for those people who have earned it. Like you said, the ones that are your real loyal customers, and then tick people off to where they'll defect.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of airlines out there. I mean, not a lot, but there are a lot of options to travel. So I know my son-in-law, he works for TTI or Milwaukee Power Tools, and he typically flies the same airline and he stays in the same places. And the benefit of that is those points have helped him a lot. And it would take a lot for him to switch. But I think, like we were saying earlier, when you go from loyalty to advocacy, then you won't get that switch, or the customer churn, is this another technical term for it. Yeah. But I think it's important to take care of what's going on. And something else you brought up that was interesting, it gets back to basic business. You have tactical plans, which are short-term, strategic plans, which are long-term. I think most of us now are running around trying to catch our tail. We make these short-term decisions being reactive, but we're not proactive. And proactive is where you think things out and you make good decisions. Reactive is when you make a really bad decision. I think we've all made bad decisions in the short term. And I think that's what a lot of these businesses are doing, whatever the business is. They're not thinking of those strategic or long-term implications. They're just thinking about what can we do now? And that's not the right thing. If you don't think it out well enough, then it's really going to cause a problem. And we see that over and over again.
Yeah. And going back to thinking it out in the long term, you have to include in that conversation the customer and the customer experience, right?
Absolutely. Every point of that customer life cycle or the CRM, we have to think about. In my model, we look at touch points and experiences. Once the customer has an experience with our company, then it makes it easier, if it was a positive experience, to do business with us again. Mm-hmm. But the touch points, which I'm sure we'll touch on in a little bit, we'll talk about how important those are as well. And I think traditionally in business, we've neglected that.
Yeah. So thanks for sharing. You just shared some of the most common mistakes that leaders make, pointing out the short-term thinking. You're right. And not really being proactive and thinking through. Is there any other mistakes that leaders make that are common that get in the way of customers or consumers turning into advocates for you?
Yeah, I do. I think a few of the things are, we can look at trends, all right? Yeah. And we can also anticipate needs before they even happen with customers. And so an example, I live in Florida. So I'm at Florida State, so I live in Tallahassee. Florida gets about between 900 to 1200 new residents, not visitors. Visitors are on top of that a day. And where are they going? They're going south. So they're going Orlando south. Not a lot are coming up in Tallahassee. This is like South Georgia. But anyway, so what are some trends that people could look at to capitalize and anticipate needs that people have and then build advocacy? One of the need for housing. Okay. The other is healthcare. So more home healthcare, more continued care facilities, better infrastructure. All of these things, these are things that are going to happen in the future that we can see now. So leaders failing to be strategic and anticipate needs that consumers have is a big mistake. I think the other thing is that a lot of firms, this whole idea of creating a CXO or a CX position or any experience position, it could be user experience, it could be employee experience, whatever the case. That's why our program is so nice, is because we've moved past just customer experience management. Now we're looking at user experience. We're looking at employee experience. So we reduce churn. Obviously, the customer experience is the pinnacle of that. But they don't add these types of positions. So as a little plug, if people are looking for really good graduates of a CX program, give us a call. All right. And then the last one, I think, is the failure to see that we don't need one particular company anymore. We are a global company, or an economy, I should say. So the importance of that is to realize that just buying something from the same person, because that's where you get it, people don't have to do that. So the consumer has so much control anymore. And I think leaders fail to see that all they have to do is go online and they could probably find that identical product somewhere else. A great story real quickly. My daughter was in line at a store. I think she has a ton of shoes. I don't know why. If you remember, Amelia Marcos used to have so many shoes, it was ridiculous, but she's going to buy a pair of boots. She notices a sign and it says, "We match prices." So my daughter takes her phone, scans the barcode or the SKU, whatever you want to call it. It comes up in a company in New York and she walks up and she said, this is all in 5 minutes of being in line. She walks up and she says, "I understand you match prices." And the gentleman says, yes, we do. She just flips her phone around and she says, I can order these from New York with free shipping. They're $50 cheaper than what you have them marked. And the clerk said, okay, I guess we'll give you $50 off. So for leaders to fail to see how powerful consumers have and that they're not the only game in town, I think those are at least initially some of the biggest mistakes that they're making.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So what I heard from you is to really be aware of the power of consumers and how that is really shifting and maybe even at an accelerated rate.
Right. And one other thing I would like to add, Mark, is that in our day and age that we live in, we do so much online that we're losing the voice of the customer. We're losing the ability to give the experience. Do I like ordering from Amazon? I don't really care. I don't talk to somebody. I just go online. I find it. I know this is cheating. I have my kids order it for me because they have Amazon Prime and it shows up at my door. Okay, great. It's just convenience. That's what I'm looking for. Amazon realizes this. Now they're going with same day delivery. The issue that we're running into is that the more we move people to order products on the internet, and let's be honest, it's pretty simple. So Mark Stalin goes out there and he finds something at this company. They take your order, they throw in a box, they put on a shipping label and they send it to you. You've done all the work for them. You inputted the credit card, you put in your address, you've selected the product, the size. All they can hope for is that you don't return it, which would add expense. And so I think in this day and age, we have to focus back on trying to connect with our customers more and not be such a victim of using technology to sell products because we found it's cheaper. But we need to really kind of focus back and to get that voice of the customer, provide the experience for them, and to make the transaction, you know, a lot more meaningful than what we've done.
And as you said earlier, think about it through the touch points that the customers go through with you and understand, you know, where there may be friction or an opportunity to improve that. I want to rewind back and pull out, often when I have guests, I try to pull out the gems because the guests often roll through it really quickly and sort of may have been missed. So there's a couple of things you said, one in particular, one I just mentioned, which is about identifying the touch points, key touch points, and understanding which ones really are the key touch points. But two is the customer efforts score, CES, we call it, which is an interesting one because there are different things you can measure. But just asking, you can ask a number of questions, whether it's an electronic survey or a focus group or an in-depth interview. But this question about how easy or difficult was it for you to do whatever that particular thing or interact with our brand? I think that's a really important one. And one of the things, I'm just going to brainstorm with you here for a second. You reminded me of one of the things we did because I had heard of all the challenges that the contact center had at the bank where I work was we had something called executive listening. And we had members of the C-suite and also the next level, the senior vice president level, all go through the contact center, put on a headset, sit next to the guy and spend a half a day and listening, kind of walking in their shoes of what it's like for them. And, you know, both the agent and the customer for the first time for many of them, being in their shoes. And you could see the agent would often have to go through seven different interfaces to get an answer for a customer, and one of them was completely asynchronous. So it ended up resulting in the purchase of a system that they ended up calling CX360, which gave them a 360 degree view of the relationship that we have with the customer. More importantly, it kind of served as middleware for all these other different applications that we used. So I just wanted to piggyback off this whole idea of customer effort score and why it's important.
That's great. And one of the issues is, especially as I teach this class more at MSU, is I'm realizing that, again, is this realm, the CX is blossoming because of the efforts of, you know, Tom DeWitt and MSU and the quality, you know, faculty they bring in, such as yourself. I think that what we're seeing is that the traditional KPIs, key performance indicators we use, they're outdated, they're antiquated. Mm. So yeah, customer effort score. What's another way to take care of that? Empower your customer service people to make decisions so you don't have to transfer to a manager. Net promoter score is a great one. Would you recommend our company? Well, you know what? If I was really upset about something else, I might say no. I don't think we're getting enough information. I think without, you know, I know that net promoter scores, which is obviously another KPI, NPS, is that it's just a low down and dirty. Would you recommend us or not? I think there's a lot of situational contexts that go into that. So I think firms need to develop key performance indicators that are specialized to their firm. Maybe to the bank, they needed to look at some other things just instead of these generic key performance indicators that we use. You know, as I said, empowering customer service will help with that. How long it takes to answer the phone. You know, the bottom line to superior customer service, it doesn't cost a lot and it gives you a key competitive advantage over your customers. And I think that's the, you know, the big thing. I think that's why, you know, we need to do that. And I think KPIs are great. I use them for my evaluations, you know, and what I'm doing now, you know. And what's nice is they'll say, how did I do against my department? How did I do against the university or the College of Business and the university in general? And I look at those. Those are indicators of how I am doing in my job. And I think that it's important to develop key performance indicators, again, that will be more specific and give us a little more detail that we can use to build off of it, to benchmark and to get better and to obviously retain customers more.
Yeah. And to your point earlier about hiring a CXO or someone in your organization to sort of serve as the conductor of the orchestra, because what we're talking about here is what you and I are just talking about is sort of one spoke in the wheel, if you will, of understanding and gauging where the touch point, where the friction or the opportunity is. Mm-hmm. Really, we're talking about a whole cycle. Correct. That needs to happen where you're listening, you're building out the experience, right? Mm-hmm. You're listening to how they like it. You're making changes, which ultimately impact financial performance.
Correct.
Hopefully lift the experience, which lifts the financials. And then you're measuring again to see if it worked. You know, and what's the issue?
Yeah, I think, you know, I have a textbook on product innovation. And one of the things is that companies have to innovate continuously. One thing I want to circle back on real quickly, and then I'll jump back in, is that for the listener, most of our students are now in that realm of a CXO or the head of the experience. So we have a lot of big hitters in our program. So I don't want the audience to think that we just have students that came out of college and then they're just learning about this. Most of them are in that field in a CX capacity now, but which is important. But getting back to what you're talking about, I really think that it's super important that that is one spoke in the wheel, but it has to be a continuous process. So one of the things we talk about in innovation is continuous innovation, making innovation part of the culture of the organization, and CX can be the same way. Again, you have a CXO that's going to make CX part of it. So you have to continually evaluate what you're doing, improve what you're doing, use those friction points as a way to learn and keep building and building and keep that going. It should never be a time where you go, well, we're perfect. You know, I still give students my own personal evaluation and build off my classes because I want to make their experience better too. And it's really, it's paid dividends. But it's something I don't go, hey, I'm perfect. Nobody's perfect. And things change. We know from being business leaders that the businesses change, the economy changes, the, you know, customer needs change constantly. So we have to stay up with that. And the only way to do it is to, you know, get the voice of the customer again, try to build advocates, but we also need to realize that we have to continually monitor. And this is what I kind of brought up early, is monitoring, auditing your CX for your company and continuously do that. Don't have a one and done like, yeah, we did that 6 years ago. Guess what? Somebody else is doing it better and you're going to lose your customers to them. So you know, it's important to do that on a continual basis.
Yeah, really good point. So lots of gems here. I love talking to you. I could talk to you all day. Your students, obviously the ones in person, benefit from candy and and all the other goodies that you pack in that don't involve food. I wonder, to land the plane, I'd love to ask the question I ask all my guests, which is, What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Sure. That's a great question. It was funny because I did talk to a friend of mine across the hall. He said he heard somebody speak, and everything that this noted CEO said, I said, oh my gosh, I've thought about that when I talked to you today. So I made a list of some things. You know, I've thought about, you know, what would I do if I can go back in time? And, you know, so you and I are 30 years old, right? So, yeah, we're from the class of 63, like we said. So,
yeah.
But I would say, don't be serious. You know, you got to have fun in life. There's so many people that are so serious, and I think life just passes them by. The other thing is seek opportunity. There's a lot of times opportunities are there. Einstein always said that in the midst of the greatest difficulties, there's always some opportunity. And I've been really fortunate with, you know, my background as being a serial entrepreneur. I didn't get into higher ed, you know, until 2006. I had a construction company. My next door neighbor worked at a community college, Grand Rapids Community College, and told me about the job. I applied for it and I got it. And that was my start to higher ed. And I got a master's degree and a doctorate degree. I was at Michigan State. I'm here. I'm back at Michigan State. I'll tell you what, if my friends from high school, if I told them what I was doing, they'd look at me and go, you were voted the class clown and the biggest flirt. There's no way in heck that's serious. So, you know, just look for opportunity, have fun, never be the person that says, I wish I would have. Life's too short. So do those things you want to do. The other big thing is save for retirement. So, I always tell my students, whatever you do, max out your retirement from day one. And the other great thing, one of the biggest joys in my life this past year is I became a grandfather. So be a grandparent. That's the other fun thing. You can love them, spoil them, and give them back. So it works out really well. So that would be my, if I could go back in a time machine, that would be what I would share with people. So
excellent. So many gems, so much wisdom, all in one show. It's almost illegal.
Well, I was trying to get the DJ voice like Nicholas Z. Zeisler.
No, can't do it.
No, but we always had a place and they'd say, welcome to the Wayside Central.
There you go. There's a little taste.
Little Casey Kasem. So.
Yeah, right. He does a good Casey Kasem. Nick Zeisler is another professor at MSU, and he was on a previous episode.
Yeah, I listened to it. He's so fun and enjoyable to listen to.
He's really funny. He was a professional DJ at one point, so that's right. What we're talking about. Hey, Ferg, this has been a ton of fun.
Thank you.
Anyone listening would like to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
Yeah, for our listeners, reach out at any time. I'm either on the websites, the marketing department websites at either Michigan State or Florida State. My emails are in there, but real quickly, it's at Michigan State. It's fergu327@msu.edu. And at Florida State, it's kferguson@business.fsu.edu. And reach out if you have any thoughts, questions, suggestions. I always love to hear practitioners, students, people that just have a simple question. I'm always here. So I look forward to hearing from anybody.
Excellent. Ferg, thank you so much for being on the show.
Mark, thank you. It's been a riot. I really enjoyed our time together. And thank you for all you're doing in the CX space. It really means a lot.
And the same here.
Thanks for listening to the Delighted Customers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode or any of my other ones, hit subscribe or follow. I've got a lot of other great guests that are coming up and a lot of other great content. And I don't want you to miss anything. You can find any links or references on the show in the show notes, and you can find those at my website at empoweredcx.com. That's empoweredcx.com. Also, make sure to check out the other shows in the Agile Brand Podcast Network by going to www.agilebrandguide.com. The Delighted Customers Podcast with Mark Slayton is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content.
The Agile Brand.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.